with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Let's talk numbers. Traditional in-person therapy can cost anywhere from $100 to $250 per session, and that adds up fast. But with BetterHelp Online Therapy, you can save up to 50% per session and pay a flat fee for weekly sessions, making therapy more affordable and easier to fit into your life. Therapy should feel accessible, not like a luxury. BetterHelp connects you with licensed professionals who can help with everything from anxiety to everyday stress at a price that makes sense. Your mental health is worth it, and now it's within reach. With over 30,000 therapists and 5 million people served globally, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform. It's convenient, flexible, and you can switch therapists anytime. Your well-being is worth it. Visit BetterHelp.com to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
Hey, everybody. We've got a very exciting episode this week where we're going to talk to Manny Fidel, and we're going to talk about Pete Buttigieg and how awesome he's been lately. And I've got a little bit of an apology for him. Please comment down below how you feel about a potential 2028 run for Mayor Pete.
Hey guys, I'm Tim Miller.
I'm Cameron Caskey.
And this is FY Pod. We got a good guest coming here today. You know, he might have a book coming out. We're not sure. We're going to have to talk to him about that. I've been working on it, and he's working on a bunch of stuff. His name is Manny Fidel. What's going on, Manny?
Not much. Doing pretty good. Thank you for having me on the show. I feel honored to be invited on a show about young people, considering I'm well into my 30s. So that was.
Oh boy, don't be aging yourself. Your skincare looks great.
I was going to say, you look so good.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been a problem in the New York City bar scene getting carded and asked if I'm over 21. But
I'm begging to get carded. I just would love to be carded. What a gift that would be. Well, man, we'll start with a little speed dating. All right, tell us about you. What's your story?
Yeah, I've been in the media kind of grind for 10 years now. Started at Business Insider as a video producer. Started off just really remedial kind of subtitling Trump speeches, that kind of stuff. Evolved into doing explainer video and then opinion video. A lot of fun doing these opinion videos about Fox News and getting yelled at by the Fox News PR people. Remember those times fondly. Then I left video briefly to do op-eds. So BI had this opinion team that I was doing some commentary on. Then I went to MSNBC. It was kind of like one of the personalities of their TikTok channel, which was really interesting.
Wait, did people that you worked with call it MS? Because every time Tim has gone on MSNBC, he's just such besties with the MSNBC folks that he calls it multiple MS. Sclerosis.
Everyone says MS there. I never got into it. It just doesn't feel right to me. I don't know why. But
everyone. Do you have personal experience with multiple sclerosis? Is that why?
No, but that is one of the things I thought of when everyone kept calling it.
How was the TikTok feed? Were you like, you know, what was kind of your, what was, did you do dances or was it screen videos or what was the vibe?
We briefly flirted with like trying to appear more TikTok-y and unfortunately for me, like those were the videos that started performing well. But we decided at some point we should feel journalistic and responsible, and so we went back to boring videos of me complaining about Ted.
Shit, maybe we need to hire you because we have no shame in the game over here about making it journalistic seeming. Well, I'll do whatever.
What exactly makes a video TikTok-y? You'd think I would know, but you know, you weren't doing the dances.
Yeah, strategically, I started trying to do commentary through these like TikTok trends. So there was a trend where One of the songs goes through every state in the country. It's some song people learned when they were kids.
Alabama, so, Alaska, yeah, Arizona, exactly. Arkansas, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Indiana. I always get stuck in Indiana.
Yeah.
What's next?
Never got good at that song. But then, I would do, like, for example, that trend. I would, like, point at states. Which state does this and this? That kind of stuff.
Are you taking notes, Sebastian? Okay, this is the kind of thing we should be doing.
This feels like the type of stuff that, like, we said we were going to talk about on FY Pod. It feels like the promise we made to everybody. I'm so interested.
Well, I'm happy to keep talking about a TikTok strategy. It was an interesting job. I wasn't really a TikTok user prior to that, but I, you know, sold myself as being a fast learner, and haven't really used it much since that job. I'll be honest. I feel like very old school media kind of, and I'm trying to break
like
that
hard
mold.
Copy newspaper. So you go to the coffee store. And...
Not that old school, but blog sites, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
I have TikTok again now. Follow either Cameron or Cam Kasky. I don't remember, but I post my news clips, like me talking on any CNN type thing. I had made one TikTok before, and I didn't make it because I wanted to become a TikToker. I made a video that was me theorizing about the new Superman movie, and it was because TikTok was the only platform I knew how to use where I could move the different images into it and say, this is what this character is going to be. And it got like 1900 views, not to be that guy. So Manny, you and I met online. We were oomphs and moots, as some people would call it.
I just recently learned what an oomph was, but we were oomphs for a long time.
For those of you who don't know, oomph is one of my followers. It was almost the name of this show.
I always thought it was one of my, I can't say the word because I get demonetized. Not because we're woke. We can say the word if we want to. I say it in the green room because I'm gay and I can say it, but Sebastian doesn't let me say it. I always thought it was that. And is that not true?
No, it is not. It's one of my followers.
It was not one of my...
Maybe
you probably just saw gay people using it, and you saw mostly gay people using it, and you figured that was it.
Yeah,
that's a fair train of thought. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. So Oomphs was almost the name of this show. Now it's FY Pod, where we have this issue where when I go on different shows to talk about it, MSNBC and CNN call it the For You Pod because FYP is For You Page. But the thing is, if anybody's watching and wants to find the show, they type in For You in podcast and they just don't find it.
Yeah, we
have some branding issues. Can you help us with that, Manny? Seems like you're kind of a brand.
Yeah, I'll send you my daily rate. We can get right to the bottom of it.
But we met in progressive circles with the online lefties. And I guess my next question for you is, where do you balance your own commentary journalism type stuff and the very, very left-wing people who we hang out with?
Yeah, I've always tried to, in my commentary, be like the leftier voice at a given a publication or outlet. It was funny going to MSNBC and like being among like TV hosts who do pretty much agree with 90% of what I say. And so, I think like you and I, we kind of like were molded in the like too online, not too far left, but like really lefty Twitter circle.
Sometimes too far though. Sometimes I said some things that maybe were a little bit left of my actual beliefs because I was getting Twittered into it.
Yeah, I think that happens to everyone, and it's definitely something I've noticed in the past couple of years, getting older and realizing, you know, what kind of policies are more practical and how exactly to support certain candidates. But for the most part, like my political ideology, you can find on like the Democratic Socialist About page. Pretty much most of the stuff I believe in. I think
we're over here bulwark pilling Cam. He's in favor of cutting red tape now. I don't know if you knew that. Cam is now in favor of cutting government red tape and also American power and might in Europe. Mm-hmm. You know, Cam's also
I think it's a good thing for Cam, honestly, like just surrounding yourself with people who have different views from you. I know it's like cliche point by now, but I'm really noticing that being helpful for me in Trump 2.0.
Yeah. I mean, when I was 21 years old, I was on the brink of anarcho-communism, but now I am co-workers with Bill Kristol. And I'll be talking to a you know, handsome young man or gorgeous young lass at a party, another Gen Z, you know, some other 20 something. And I'll be like, hey, so I don't want to be that guy, but I work with Bill Kristol.
Yeah.
And they're like, whoa, is me. Yeah. You know, Bill Kristol. And I'm like, no, Tim actually very deliberately keeps me away from him.
No, I protect him
because I'll embarrass Tim.
I have a few questions for you. We're going to get to the news eventually. For people who care about the news, they can fast forward. But I've pulled up the DSA's platform.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know if you accurately identified your views, but we're going to test you.
Let's see.
Do you support complete abolition of the carceral state?
The carceral state. I mean, you could define that in so many ways, but no.
Prison abolition? I mean, some people need to be in prison, right?
I think one of the biggest problems with the left is a messaging problem. I think, like, you know, sometimes when people on the left say prison abolition, they mean breaking down kind of the more carceral, more police state apparatus, is that a word that we have?
Free all people from involuntary confinement. I mean, I'm a lefty. Okay. I'm very unhappy about Sakoch.
Which DSA page is that, by the way?
DSAUSA.org.
All right, maybe I have to go back.
Okay,
and,
I'm just saying,
reassess some of this, my views.
I just mean kind of
basic stuff, universal health care, student loans, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
I think we should abolish the private prisons. I read about it a little bit, and it seems like the prisons being private is not a great idea.
I'm not a big fan of private prisons myself. Okay, well, we'll continue going down the DSA page maybe at another date and kind of do a toots and boots on what they've got. There are a couple of things that I could get on board with over here. I want to hear about your book because, well, tell us about your book, and then I have a couple of things I want to pick your brain on.
For sure, yeah. The book is called Colored People Time. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of that phrase before, but it's
similar to New Orleans time.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a reference to, you know, certain people who might look like me being late to certain things, but the title is tongue in cheek. It's a book of essays that are hopefully humorous, and it's about my life, kind of memoir-esque. It's about politics and pop culture. It's just 10 different essays about different things. But,
and what's the delay on that? I noticed you announced it 104 weeks ago.
Yeah. There's been a lot of delays. One of them is me turning it in a year after I was supposed to. Another delay is, you know, without naming any names, there are some pretty big celebrities on Penguin Random House's One World imprint that might have delayed the release of my title. But
I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but it sounds like your submissions of the writing was on Colored People Time.
It absolutely was, and it's something
I was about to chime in with. I was about to say Penguin Random House time. That was going to be my way of getting around it.
Yeah, it's something I absolutely try to avoid, but it's just kind of in my DNA, I think.
Yeah. So here's the question. I was this is unintentional name drop. I was halfway out my mouth, and I realized this was going to be a brag. I didn't mean it. But I was having dinner with Vice President Kamala Harris when she was vice president before she lost.
Okay.
It's kind of just one of these like little dinners she has with people. Thought influencers, and et cetera. And we're going around the table. And one of the guys at the table, I guess I probably shouldn't out him, but it was black guy. And he said to her that he was sick of the Democrats using people of color. And he was sick of them using BIPOC. Because he was like, black men are not getting recognized, right? Like when you do that, it's a way of kind of like lumping in everybody when we've got unique problems. And so when I saw the name of your book, I was just curious what your take was on that.
I've heard that complaint also about the word Latinx, but yeah. If I'm honest, in my experience, that was one of the situations where people complained about it more than it was being used. Like, I don't think I've ever heard someone earnestly use the word Latinx. I think sometimes on like university websites or whatever, it's there or was there, but I thought that the reaction to those kind of words was kind of astro.
People do use people of color, though. And I have to tell you, I had one of my friends, one of the members of the couple might be listening. So this might be embarrassing for them. But it's an Asian man and a white lady. Uh-huh. And they had a child. And she was referencing, I adopted a black girl. So she was referencing how our children are BIPOCs.
Yeah.
And I was like,
indigenous people. Yeah, of color,
I was like, yeah. Actually, no. Actually, your child does. And she was doing her best. She was trying to be woke. And I was like, your child doesn't quite cover. A half Asian is not actually covered under the BIPOC rubric.
Yeah. They don't quite count. No, I'm just kidding.
Is it black, indigenous, people of color, or is it black, indigenous, and people of color?
No.
I don't even know. This is one of my like oldest takes. It's like, you know, I think especially in the scenario you just brought up, Tim, like they're just kids. Why are all like they're just kids? We don't need to label them 40 different ways to Sunday. But yeah.
I've struggled. I have a very read the room situation with Latinx versus Latino or Latina, because I do work in political spaces and Hollywood and theater type spaces where the people I'm with might be more of a Latinx, or what I think is widely being used now is Latine thing. Mm-hmm. But then I'll be around other Latinx people who hear Latinx and go, shut the fuck up.
Like, yeah.
Like, shut up, you fucking white jerk. Yeah.
It's kind of like how I feel when a straight couple talks about their boyfriend or girlfriend or wife or husband as a partner. And I was no, yeah. Y'all forced us to do this because we were ghettoized as a second class citizens for a long time. That's why gays called their fucking husband partner, because they weren't allowed to have husbands. It's not allyship to do that. You just call it wife or husband. It's fine.
Only straight people who should be allowed to say partner are cowboys.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I agree. Or business. Or I guess your business partner.
Yeah, true.
But even then, you say business partner.
You have a business managing partner.
Your partner at like tennis, you know, just several other ways you should be allowed to use it.
What about gangbang? How are we feeling about the use of the term gangbanger as these days?
Has there been
I've been noticing the Trump administration has been calling all of the people we sent to the prison gangbangers, and I was like. Yeah, I'm not sure if that means what you – I don't know if you're getting there what you're going for.
That was like 90s kind of rhetoric about gangs, I think, right? Gangbangers. Yeah. I remember that. Certainly, it does have a different kind of connotation in the online world. But it's one of those things my brain can compartmentalize. When depending on who's saying it, I know what they mean.
Hey, friend. I know how it feels, waking up exhausted after multiple trips to the bathroom and feeling embarrassed by sudden leaks. I used to be constantly on edge, searching for a restroom whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Woman. I was skeptical at first, but 2 months in, everything changed. I experienced improved bladder control. No more heart-stopping moments when I laugh or sneeze, less urge to go, deeper and more restful sleep. I finally felt like myself again, confident and in control. Better Woman is natural, effective, and trusted by women for over 25 years. Ready to take back your control? Head over to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Uses directed, individual results may vary. Hey, friend, I know how this feels, waking up exhausted after multiple trips to the bathroom and feeling embarrassed by sudden leaks. I used to be constantly on edge, searching for a restroom whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Woman. I was skeptical at first, but 2 months in, everything changed. I experienced improved bladder control. No more heart-stopping moments when I laugh or sneeze. Less urge to go, deeper and more restful sleep. I finally felt like myself again, confident and in control. Better Woman is natural, effective, clinically tested, and trusted by women for over 25 years. Ready to take back your control? Head over to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Uses directed, individual results may vary. Hey, friend, I know how it feels, waking up exhausted after multiple trips to the bathroom and feeling embarrassed by sudden leaks. I used to be constantly on edge, searching for a restroom whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Woman. I was skeptical at first, but 2 months in, everything changed. I experienced improved bladder control. No more heart-stopping moments when I laugh or sneeze, less urge to go, deeper and more restful sleep. I finally felt like myself again, confident and in control. Better Woman is natural, effective, and trusted by women for over 25 years. Ready to take back your control? Head over to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Uses directed, individual results may vary. Hey, friend, I know how this feels. Waking up exhausted after multiple trips to the bathroom and feeling embarrassed by sudden leaks. I used to be constantly on edge, searching for a restroom whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Woman. I was skeptical at first, but 2 months in, everything changed. I experienced improved bladder control. No more heart-stopping moments when I laugh or sneeze. Less urge to go. Deeper and more restful sleep. I finally felt like myself again, confident and in control. Better Woman is natural, effective, clinically tested, and trusted by women for over 25 years. Ready to take back your control? Head over to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Uses directed, individual results may vary.
I guess we should talk about the news, but do you have anything else you want to share about yourself? Any other?
Yeah, sure. I recently launched a podcast, joining one of billions of people.
Good luck out there.
December, it's called No Such Thing. It's like an explainer show. It's doing pretty well for how soon we launched it, but check it out on.
We're going to have to crush you in the ratings, but it's nice. Yeah. Good.
That's how do you feel, one. Manny, about telling people you have a podcast?
Because it's pretty humiliating.
I struggle with this thing.
Yeah.
When I'm at like a social gathering or a party or something, it used to be the thing that bothered me was people saying, oh, this is Cameron. He's from, you know, Parkland where there was the school shooting, you know, March for Our Lives. And I'd be like, I'm just trying to have a good night. Like, fuck off.
Yeah.
But now it's, hey, it's Cameron. He has this podcast. And I'm like, okay, but it's worse with this guy, Tim Miller. Tim Miller's got a lot of ethos. People really like him.
Yeah.
Bill Kristol is also at our network.
The school shooting survivor was preferable to podcaster.
I was so much more comfortable because I'm from Parkland. Like, it's where I'm from. The podcast thing, I just have, because you can't be like, but don't worry, we do pretty well. So I just have to be like, yeah, we've got a podcast with a never Trump Republican.
Yeah.
It happens to be really good.
I think one of the few scenarios where it's okay to say that you have a podcast is if you are someone like Tim Miller, who's like been in the game for a long time. I remember watching Tim Miller on like every other Bill Maher episode. When you've got like a name attached to the podcast, it's great.
This is, speaking of humiliating, this is the kind of thing that's happening to me now where I'll like go to speak at a college and people and kids will be like, I've been watching you since I was a child.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
that was 5 years ago.
Yeah. I'm like, that's not really, that makes me sad.
Actually. How did you feel about Tim? Now I have to ask. I didn't know you used to be a regular on Bill Maher because, Manny, I don't know if you know this about our show, but I've never really looked Tim up. But, you know, Larry David released an essay called My Dinner with Adolf to mock Bill Maher for his Trump fangirl moment. And Bill Maher, who's constantly talking about how comedy is dead and people are trying to get in the way of real comedy, saw Larry's comedic essay and threw a whole fit about it. How do you feel about that, Tim?
I thought it was pretty pathetic. Here's the thing. Like, I as people know who listen to this, I hung out with Bannon a couple of times. I will hang out with him. I don't then come out of the meeting, though, and say, you know, that Bannon, he's a little bit nicer than you realize. You know, when you get him off the camera, he's not quite as crazy. Like, I don't try to solve it. Like, Bannon fucking sucks. Like, he is a awful person that is trying to ruin the country. That's also a good hang, but that doesn't make him any more of a good person, right? And so, like, there's this conflation. Like, that was the thing that bugged me about the Bill Maher thing. It's like, this conflate, like, oh, Trump was a little bit of a good hang that night and he didn't seem as crazy. It's like, well, yeah, man, what did you expect? Like, fucking crazy. Like, have you ever, like, you think if you go meet every murderer that, like, every one of them, like, takes out a fucking chainsaw as soon as you see him, is like, I've got fucking killer eyes, Bill. It's like, no, man, humans are fucking complicated. Like, humans that do really bad things also can like make a funny joke at dinner. So like that was the thing that bugged me about Bill, that he was just so fucking gullible that he got, you know, that it was credulous. That was the thing that bugged me about it.
I was conflicted about it because I can easily see the decision from the lens of like, yeah, this is going to be content for the show I'm doing on Friday. Right. On the other hand, yeah, he's like such a bit like a powerful voice in liberal circles. He's smart enough to know, I think, hopefully, that Trump was kind of using him in that scenario, image wise. But
I don't think he is smart enough to know that. Maybe not. He got totally used.
Yeah,
I was just like, I want to be like Bill Maher. Have you ever watched The Sopranos? Like, Tony was also a good hang, but he was a murderer. That was the point of the show. You know,
I think this is a good segue. I think this is a good segue into one of our topics in the news today, which is Pete Buttigieg on Andrew Schultz's podcast.
Yeah,
kind of really reaming the right a little bit just through swagger and charisma. And it brings to mind, you know, Andrew Schultz is a podcaster. I don't know that much about him, except he does not have a face that is appropriate for a mustache and he looks like a fucking idiot. But he had recently come out and said like, oh yeah, I used to be a liberal back when liberals were cool and they were getting their dick sucked in the White House. But now, you know, the liberals aren't cool anymore, you know, so I'm a conservative now because that's what's cool. And you're right. People in right-wing circles seem to still think that MAGA is the counterculture, but it's the culture now. And that doesn't mean that, like, you know, Nancy Pelosi is what's hip. But, you know, Pete Buttigieg went on to Andrew Schultz's podcast and really showed just how thin the right-wing ideology is right now by basically explaining something. And Andrew Schultz was like, oh, yeah, man, that was great.
Yeah, if you press those guys like even a little bit on some topic that they think they know about, they completely fold. And I noticed that actually throughout the duration of.
Did you watch the whole 3 hours, Manny?
Almost. I've got about 12 minutes left.
I was excited to watch it, and then it was 3 hours, and I'm doing like 90 podcasts a week, and I've got to do Nicole Wallace, and I went to the Goose Show, and you know I've got a parent, and so I couldn't fit the 3 hours into my schedule. So why don't you give us a little of a readout?
Yeah, I'll give you a quick summary. Basically, he goes on. You know, I was surprised by the amount of times he actually had to stop or pause or drop like an interesting point because the hosts needed to like crack their like 3 minute long belabored jokes. So that kind of actually made for a bad watching experience. But yeah, I think Pete Buttigieg, this is something I've been thinking about ever since, you know, in contrast with, you know, my 2020 lefty online days. Is that he's like a really good communicator, and that's something I'm realizing now. He's really good at, you know, hearing someone's complaint about something, addressing the like emotional layer to the complaint first, and then telling the person why they might be wrong, or just contextualizing the issue a little bit better. And that's what's happened. That happened probably 30 times during the duration of the show. And it made me think about like politicians is foray into these kind of like manosphere podcasts. One example was, you know, these four bros talking about how good Doge is and how like effective the Department of Government efficiency is. And I noticed something they kept bringing up, which was like, hey, I don't want to sound like I'm defending the Trump administration. And I believe them, but the reason it does sound like they're defending the Trump administration is because that's where all their information comes from. And I don't think enough Democrats are going on those kinds of shows. And I'm always conflicted as like a consumer of media, because I think the shows are dumb. But at the same time, you should go on to them if you're an elected official or someone who's trying to convince constituents about X, Y, and Z. So
here's my question. Somebody who's watched the 3 hours. I mean, I've seen a couple of clips, and obviously Pete was great. Pete's great in these settings. He has a really good clip where he's like, if people haven't seen it, we'll put it in the notes, where he's like explaining what freedom is to him. And it was like, it was pretty good. It's a nice pushback to like the bro, I should be free to say pussy if I want to. And it's like, well, no, freedom's a little more complicated than that. But so that part was good. My question though is like, there's one part of me that's like, yeah, more Democrats should do this. Like, because it's, if you go on to someplace and talk to people for 2 hours, they realize you don't have fucking horns and aren't like, you know, trafficking babies in a pizza basement and like whatever. They see you're a normal person. On the other hand, I think, are there other Democrats, like how many Democrats could do it well? Like how hard did it seem? Like as a consumer, did it seem like something you're like, oh yeah, man, I could see Cory Booker doing this? Or do you watch it and be like, man, no, thank God Pete's doing this, because this seems hard.
Herein lies the issue. So I think more of them should do it, but only Pete, maybe one or two other Democrats, can actually thrive in that environment. And, you know, 4 years ago, I probably wasn't someone who thought he could, but now I'm learning a lot more about him. I don't see, you know, Kamala Harris or Cory Booker being able to sit there for 3 hours and hear like the dumbest shit possible, but still be able to like be personable and engage the hosts of the show. So that is a real problem. It's like a kind of a conundrum. They should do it more, but no one can do it to that extent.
I think the thing that Pete does very effectively, I used to be super anti-Pete and I used to think he was a square and that he wasn't making us look any better. And then a year or so ago, some of my normal people friends, I got this group chat called Infinity Gang. It's like been my best friends for like 7 years.
That's the normal group? The Infinity Gang?
That's the normal group. Regular guys. We're called Infinity Gang because one of our friends is obsessed with the infinity sign because his name is Mooch. It's Anthony Scaramucci's adult son. And he goes by the nickname
Anthony
Mooch.
Scaramucci's adult son is in the normal text chain called Infinity Gang?
He's one of my best friends.
Okay, and I'm concerned about what the other text chains are, but go ahead. So I'm just trying to get the facts.
His name is Anthony Scaramucci Jr., and he also took the nickname from his father. So his father, the Mooch, Mooch is just Mooch without the. But Infinity Gang is my friends who see some articles about politics and will tell me what they think, but they aren't political nerds like other people I know. And two of my buddies who were like, Mooch not included, I'm not going to indict him with that. Two of my other buddies who kind of have the like Trump is funny thing that some people do where they're like, we don't support Trump, but we think he's funny.
Yeah. Which
there's truth to that. But also I think some people get a little too buddy buddy with it. But they also think that Barack Obama is the coolest person of all time and he plays basketball and smokes cigarettes and shit. Mm-hmm. So these guys who don't really engage with me about politics unless I directly ask, they sent a clip of Mayor Pete talking about something. I don't even remember what it was.
I bet it was his appearance on the Jubilee, the 1 vs. 20 videos.
I don't know, but they sent it to me and they were like, wait, this guy's spitting facts. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah. So my whole opinion on Pete changed. And since then, I've been able to see that like he is such a great communicator. And in terms of, you know, the Kamala and Corey maybe not being able to do Joe Rogan, it kind of makes me think, I think one of the reasons Pete is so effective and personable is that he isn't trying very hard to have a personality that he doesn't have. And I think one of the things that makes a lot of Democrats so cringe when they're trying to do that is they try so hard to, I'm a normal person, look at me. And in doing that, they like embarrass themselves. Like there's no way to look less cool than to try and look cooler than you really are. And Pete is sort of owning this fact that he's kind of like a nerdy square who's just going to tell you the facts. So he, you know, he's not falling because he's not jumping too high. But Tim, you had said, we were talking about this a long time ago, I think on the first video you and I ever did, something that cursed you with me for much longer than it should have been. You had said, I was talking to Mayor Pete and I said to him, you can't be the guy who goes on Joe Rogan. Has your opinion on that changed?
I don't know if that's exactly what I said, because I do think he should go on Joe Rogan. What I don't know is, can Pete be the person that reaches like bros? And by that, I don't really mean like even like kind of college educated, like frat guys. I mean like working class, like the people that the Democrats really struggled with, like working class Black people, working class Hispanic people. It is like a kind of, I speak seven languages, like kind of nerdy guy, you know, who's gay. Is he like going to be able to be is he going to be able to resonate with them? And I don't know the answer to that. And so I meant it more on like, I don't know if he could do it in a way that could help him become the president, right? Because I think that like he has some issues. I would love to be wrong. And I'm pretty sure I said this because I love Pete. I would love to be wrong, but that's the thing that I worry about. That said, he could go over there in a way that'd be useful in a way to just like translate Democrats for people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? In a way that maybe helps pave the way for some other person. I'm not really sure, but you know, I do think that he's better than some of the other options, but I do wonder, you know, about whether the gayness and just the nerdiness and the like is overcomable.
Well, just as a piece of anecdotal evidence, this show, it's called Flagrant. It's like the broiest thing you can imagine. Yep. And in the comment section of Pete Buttigieg's appearance, it's all positive. It's like, wow, I'm learning this X, Y, and Z about some issue. People are noting that they are hearing counter facts than what they've heard, especially with the Doge thing. I thought that was probably the most valuable part of the episode, is that people learning that there aren't millions of dead people getting Social Security. I think you're right, Tim. It's like right now I see Pete as like the best communicator for the Democrats in terms of getting a message to constituents. I don't know if that's the same exact strategy he's going to need if he's like actually running for president in the next election. But I find it to be really valuable for just that mission of like tapping into this audience that the MAGA people have been so good at reaching.
I want to say one more thing on this in Pete's defense, which is he has exceeded my expectations at every turn. So maybe I'll be wrong about him on this. My friend Liz Smith was his media guru. Mm-hmm. Me and Liz are besties. And she was like, I'm going to go work for this guy when he's running for president. And I told her she was insane. I asked her if she was having a mental breakdown. And then she was like, will you go meet with him? And I went to one of these little round table things with him. And I walked out and I was like, he seems fine. He's probably a great mayor, but I don't know. Yeah. I think you're crazy if you think that he's going to win. Mm-hmm. And then, he wins the Iowa caucus. Sorry, Bernie people. I was just totally wrong from the start about it. So maybe I'm wrong about the bro stuff too. Maybe it works.
Who is the second best Dem right now in terms of being able to go into an arena like that and just holding their
own? I think AOC would be fine. And she's pretty natural. I think that there will be misogyny, and sometimes she does little social justice warrior talk in a way that might turn off some people. I don't know. But again, she could exceed my expectations. That would be what I'd be worried about. Those two things. Wes Moore is pretty good. He's a guy. He gets into PowerPoint speak a little bit for me sometimes,
that's what's tough, I think, to feel personable. So many politicians are, they're like that.
Yeah, but I like Wes. Those are Cam. I on the other pod today, I interviewed Beto, and we just don't deserve Beto. We don't deserve him. He's so great. He's so great, dreamy. Yeah. I'm just there. I'm just like, God. In a better world, He'd be the governor of Texas.
He was cursed with the state of Texas. You know totally what I mean? Cursed. Put that guy anywhere else.
Totally cursed. So I don't know, but he could do it, obviously.
I thought about this with because, someone else who's making this kind of foray into podcasts, or the manosphere anyway, is Gavin Newsom. And I always liked his kind of appearances on Fox News and stuff. Not because of what he's saying necessarily, but because he's going into a place that vehemently disagrees with everything he believes in. And just having that ability to exist there. But, it doesn't feel – he doesn't feel as good at communicating as Pete, in my opinion. He feels like debating versus Pete, who feels like he's having a conversation with you.
What about J.B. Pritzker? People like a jolly fat guy.
Yeah, yeah, he's got –
Who doesn't love a jolly fat guy? Chris Farley. Everybody loves Chris Farley. Yeah. Maybe that would work for bros.
Could I say one quick thing on Pete with this?
Please, yeah, sure. Sebastian.
It's not the bro culture that I worry about with Pete. It's that I think the Democrats, we talked about this, they really want a fighter. And I can't see Pete getting visibly mad or raising his voice even about anything. And that, for me, that's the nail, is the
You don't think Pete's ever been punched?
I don't think Pete has ever yelled in his life is the thing. And I think that genuine, he's passionate, but in a sort of I thought this through with my therapist kind of way.
Cameron, have you been punched?
Yes. No further comment because
I was an obvious one. Manny, you don't seem like you've been punched.
I have been punched before. Also,
really?
Also a no further comment situation.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have to ask you a follow-up.
No, a very old, years old friend dispute, a very drunken 4 a.m. situation.
Intra-friend dispute.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Who
got the better of it?
Oh, I didn't raise a hand.
Okay, you just got smoked.
Yeah, I turned the other side. I don't even try.
So I threw the first punch. That was me. But don't worry, because I was a freshman in high school, and the person that I threw the punch at was a freshman in college at Florida State University, and his arms were probably the size of my head, and it really hurt, and my mouth was bleeding. I didn't deserve it morally or spiritually, but I did throw the first punch. And I think that's what I say in response to you, Sebastian, with the Pete thing is, I agree, people want sort of like a fighter who can come out and be big like that. But the other thing I think is some people that we characterize as fighters, the more swings you take, the more misses, right? So a lot of the people who I think are quote unquote fighters end up tripping up the most when they're doing that fighting. So I think one of the things Pete does very effectively, and again, this is not in contrast to what you're saying, it's just a yes and. One of the things he does very effectively is he fights by, even when people are trying to hit him, he just talks to them. And that's one of the things he does on Fox News so well. He doesn't meet these people where they're at. He doesn't meet that energy, because when people are trying to debate you and argue you, the more elevated you make it, they match that. And if you can keep calm and steady the way he does, it does, you know, sort of scramble people's debate computers a little bit.
I have one more Pete question for, I think we have one other news item. But do you guys think the other challenge that he would have is, it just felt like it was very cool to dunk on Pete in like young online, like TikTok culture. Like
I was doing half of it.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. So do you want to apologize to him right now? Actually, you can look at the camera to say, address your apology to Chasten. Okay. Chasten took a lot of heat.
I think Chasten follows me on Twitter. I've been going around to my friend groups and being like, hey, I was wrong. In 2020, when I called Pete Buttigieg a little rat or whatever, I was so engrossed into that like echo chamber of far leftism, and I still believe all of that stuff, but wasn't able to see past my anti-establishment glasses and understand just how valuable he is in terms of communication right now. I don't know how I'm going to feel about him as a presidential candidate once that comes around, but just as someone who's like going to be the press secretary for the Democrats, so to speak, I think he's doing a great job right now.
I didn't hear an I'm sorry there, but Chasten, I think, will forgive you anyway. We'll see what he says. He's a viewer. Yeah. What?
Just to get on this train, Pete Buttigieg, I'm sorry. I made a little bit of fun of you. I called you a dork and a dweeb and a nerd and a square. I meant it. I'm not going to say I didn't mean it, but I don't mean it now. Now, if I could speak to people the way you did, I would have a much better career than I currently do. And I think that you are one of the most valuable people in the party right now, and you should keep on slaying. And Chasten, I'm sure I made fun of you too. And for that, I'm sorry. I hope you too have a very bright future, and I'm glad that we got to have this moment.
One thing I'm proud of is I never made fun of Chasten.
Okay, so here's my question though: do the younger, less wise versions of you, will they just, you know, will we just repeat the same history? You know, the 19-year-olds out there.
It's a great question. I don't know. You know, after this election, I stopped being on Twitter/X so much.
Yeah.
And Pete's kind of not been the topic of conversation in those circles, I don't think.
Right.
Great question, though.
What did you think about his answer about the adoption thing? I saw some of the MAGA guys were going after him because he was talking about how they're two different. If you want to adopt a kid and you don't care what the race is, then the list is shorter, right? Like, and if you just want a white kid, then like the list is longer. And he mentioned that, and like some of the MAGAs were like going after him about that. How did that little combo read in the room?
I'll be honest. I put that show on while I'm like eating lunch. I think I missed that part. I'll go back and listen. But yeah, I think people should ask themselves if, you know, why they would only want a white kid. And even if, you know, I'm not surprised. Like, I think, you want maybe a kid that kind of looks like you. That's not the craziest thing in the world, but I think people should ask themselves, you know, what exactly makes them think that one kid is worth less than the other.
It's kind of crazy, actually. Like, what you think that if the kid has brown eyes like you, or like has a fucking like, you know, big schnoz, that they're gonna love them more. It's a little crazy.
I come from a big adoption family because my father and grandfather did adoptions. And I got to, you know, sometimes kids who were kind of in between foster care and getting adopted would stay at our house when I was growing up. And that was really interesting. But just it's kind of weird because it brings to mind, you know, if you're white and you want like only a white kid, like you said, Tim, it's like if you want them to be in your image, that's still an adopted child. That doesn't make them any more your biological child. And it's this weird, like, I wouldn't go and call it eugenics, but it's like eugenics. It's like the vibe of eugenics.
Adjacent.
Eugenics core. Because it's like, don't you just want a fucking kid?
Yeah.
Like, if you want a kid, you'd want any kid.
Love that child.
There's something narcissistic about wanting a kid who has the same race as you. I'm sorry. There, I said it here on the Bulwark. Here on
All right.
Hey, friend. I know how it feels, waking up exhausted after multiple trips to the bathroom and feeling embarrassed by sudden leaks. I used to be constantly on edge, searching for a restroom whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Woman. I was skeptical at first, but 2 months in, everything changed. I experienced improved bladder control, no more heart-stopping moments when I laugh or sneeze, less urge to go, deeper and more restful sleep. I finally felt like myself again, confident and in control. Better Woman is natural, effective, and trusted by women for over 25 years. Ready to take back your control? Head over to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Uses directed, individual results may vary.
Cameron, you had another topic you wanted to hit before we got to Gen Z News. I don't remember what it was.
Also pertains to my family, which is I have a brother who has autism. This is not the type of person who you might not know has autism. He just happens to be really good at doing puzzles or not read certain social cues. Holden has like the type of autism that you can read 10 seconds into talking to him. He's very handsome. He's very social.
Naturally.
He has girlfriends. He has two jobs. All the things that RFK was saying autistic people can't do, Holden does quite easily. He's saying that they can't go and play baseball. They can't pay taxes. I'm pretty sure like a year ago, Holden, my autistic little brother, probably paid more in taxes than I did because I think he was making more money.
But his two jobs, can we say? Or is that
he works at a movie theater, scooping popcorn and cleaning up the theaters when people leave. And he works at a hotel, pouring water for people at events and folding napkins and stuff like that. And he loves making money so he could buy little gifts for his little autistic girlfriends. And he's really such a smart guy. When you're talking to him, if you were like three beers in and you talked to Holden, you might just think he's another guy who's three beers in because he's so social. He loves talking to people. He loves getting to know people. And that was something he struggled with growing up because when he was in classes with other developmentally disabled kids, a lot of them would be a little bit maybe behind him is a bad way to put it in terms of their development socially. So he was around a lot of kids who were dealing with things that were sort of different from what Holden did because Holden has a lot of, you know, issues doing certain things that neurotypical, so to speak, people can do. But socializing is not one of those things. So he was socially a little stressed out growing up because of, you know, autism is such a wide spectrum that no two snowflakes look alike. Not to call these kids snowflakes, that has a different meaning now, but kids with special needs all have different types of special needs. So it was hard to sometimes match the energy of the people in the room. But I say this because we are doing this Nazi thing where there's going to be an autism registry using public and private data. And Manny, you had brought this up to me. I want to know how you feel about it.
Yeah, it's hard to have like, I don't know where to start with a reaction. It's like, you know, my first reaction to things is to make a joke, but like sometimes it's so dark, but like, I feel like this is really like an X-Men villain, like a badly written X-Men villain. Like who thinks of this? And RFK Jr., he's got the problem with him is that he's starting from a conclusion, right? Like his whole mission here is to quote unquote solve the quote unquote autism epidemic. And he's already messaged that it can't be that diagnosing has gotten better. But that's the problem with this kind of study he's trying to do, which is he's starting from a conclusion and working backwards to find support for that conclusion. And that's just not how science works. And, you know, obviously there's this affects millions of people. If I had any kind of disorder, I wouldn't want like the government keeping tabs on me. It's very basic stuff that I feel like we have to react to, which just feels so unfair.
It's just so crazy because we're ending fucking cancer studies that have been going on for 14 years, right in the middle. That's it. They're over, defunded. And now it's like, no, we're going to do an autism study. Right. And, you know, more kids have autism now. It's not because we're getting better at diagnosing it. It's because there's fluoride in the water. It's like, Tim, what would you say is the most egregious Make America Healthy Again messaging that you've seen?
I mean, I don't know about RFK Jr. is a ridiculous human and he has a brain worm. He sounds horrible. He like does steroids, obviously. I mean, I guess I don't have 100% proof, but like.
If it looks like
a steroid, it smells like a steroid. I think it's probably steroids. He's either in a tanning booth, you know, this is not a healthy man. Like nobody would look at this man and think, oh boy. And so like he's preposterous, but I just think what you just said, Cam, like the funding cutting. I mean, if you just talk to anybody, like I've got a bunch of friends who are doctors because my best friend is a doctor. So like I've met all his doctor friends. And like I when I hear from all of them, like, it's just like, people have not yet really grasped like the scope of what is being lost as far as like funding for long-term research for various diseases and the stuff that the private sector like is just not going to do. And so like to be doing that in concert with this other stuff fucking sucks. You suck, RFK Jr. Okay, we've got to go to a Boomer Mailbag and Gen Z News. Unless you had a final thought on that, Cameron, I didn't want to.
I was just going to say we should do a study about why there are people who sound like this, like RFK talking about how we're going to make people healthy and sounding like his throat cancer has throat cancer. Wow. But that's all.
I wish I could do a good RFK. Okay, listeners, listen to me. Boomer listeners. The mailbag is bulwarkpodcast@thebulwark.com. I was very disappointed with the boomer questions from this week. So you can do better, boomer listeners. Send us questions, what things you want to know about the youth, life advice, etc. Since the boomer questions were so bad, I'm going to turn to a question from Dale at Gen Xer. Why do you show Gen X no love? None of us is responsible for the shit show that is Washington right now. Okay, none of us are responsible for the shit show in Washington right now. And actually all of you are responsible for the shit show in Washington right now because Gen X voted the most for fucking Trump. So Dale, suck it.
Also, Dale, real quick. Part of the show that we try to talk about as much as possible is what's going on with Gen Z, because Gen Z surprised everybody by being crazy and terrible in this election. And one thing it's always important to note is that Gen X parented us. And you got to talk to your kids. You got to get your kids in order, right? If I had a child in first grade and there was a kid who bullied my child, I wouldn't want to talk to that kid. I would want to talk to their parents. So let's remember, you all have a responsibility to make sure your kids aren't going insane. And if you're looking at your little kid on their fucking iPad right now, which millennial parents also have to think about, you need to make sure you have an eye on what they're watching.
Parent better, Gen X. I agree with Cameron. Now on to Gen Z News.
According to a new survey from communications firm Edelman, 45% of adults age 18 to 34 admitted to disregarding their health provider's guidance in favor of information from a friend or family member in the past year. 38% of young adults said they've ignored their provider in favor of advice from social media, a 12-point increase from the year before.
Damn, that's Gen Z respondents?
Age 18 to 34, so some millennials.
So it includes some young millennials, which I kind of lump in with Gen Z. I don't, you know, the young millennials also had their brains broken by fucking social media. So
it sounds like Gen Z is going to break another record by being like the shortest lived generation. If that continues to be the norm?
Well, I've always said we're called Gen Z because Z is the last one. But I was going to say this when we were talking about the defunding of all this medical research. It's like, you know, a lot of people in Gen Z, I think, have read about some of the things that are happening to our bodies that might not have happened to previous generations. Obviously, boomers were like eating asbestos for dinner. And you know, lead was in everything. But you ever hear of this thing called microplastics? It really looks like it's going to be giving a lot of us cancer. And kind of part of the reason that I shrugged that off and said, okay, maybe I'll get microplastic cancer, is that I thought that by the time I was getting my microplastic cancer, medical research would have advanced to a point where they could stop my microplastic cancer. But it's like, nope, we did away with that. Instead, we're Googling why kids have autism. And so,
yeah,
that is
so, yeah, my thought to that and my message to Gen Z is, like a good elder millennial, I also don't listen to my doctor's advice sometimes. I think I had 4 Parliament lights yesterday. I hope you're not listening, Mom. But it's not because I listened to some moron on TikTok tell me that Parliament lights are actually healthy and it's like eating an apple a day. Like it's somebody, some like Maha Mom influencer. And I'm like, oh man, this person has 1.2 million followers on Instagram, so they're probably smarter than my doctor. No, I'm doing it because I'm making a conscious choice that I would rather enjoy myself than extend an extra year of my life. Probably dumb. This will come back to haunt me, but I'm doing it consciously. Do not be manipulated by these influencers, you idiots. That's my thought.
And with that, we say slay. Manny, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Absolutely. What a blast.
I'm grateful for you, and I look forward to the next 100 weeks of your book promotion.
Cannot wait. Thank you so much, guys. This is a blast.
Slay.